Chapter 11. After a few more romps and a few more orgasms, the Kunag women and I passed out in the bed in the corner of the fertility hut. It may have only been the middle of the day, but we'd been through a lot in the last 24 hours. We'd witnessed our very first birth of a wind dragon and its subsequent bonding. We'd celebrated the pregnancy of the Chero Queen Mother. We'd fought off a horde of bloodthirsty orcs and recaptured my beloved ship. And perhaps the most exhaustive of all, I'd slept with both a beautiful rhino woman and two extremely exuberant Kunag women. I deserved a bit of shut-eye after all that. I awoke a few hours later with Lazan on one arm and Nadir on the other, and both of the raccoon women were still sound asleep and nuzzled into my body, like I was the only source of warmth for 1,000 miles. Their tails flickered sporadically as they slept, and I wondered what sorts of wonderful dreams they were having at the moment. I continued to lay there in the bed with the two women as I stared up at the ceiling and wondered what would happen next. We'd completed our mission of hatching the wind dragon, and we'd successfully fought off the orcs who'd threatened the Chero women's way of life. I suppose now was the time to return to our island, back to our friends and my beloved Queen Nerissa. Once we were back, we could all work together to formulate our next plan of attack. There were still several fire-breathing dragons out there, all of which were partially bonded to Lazan, Nadir, Dwalin, and Elzara. We had to find them and finish the ceremony before the orcs could, and it was going to be a walk in the park now that Swa'er was on our side. Although that brought up an interesting point. If we wanted Swa'er to join our crew permanently, that would mean his bondmate would need to come along, too. I knew Batari said how much she cared about me and how she'd follow me wherever I went, but was she really just going to up and leave her people behind? What would happen to the rest of her village? Would Ashanti and Mercuri be all right with losing their best friend, or would they want to come along as well? Then there was the whole situation with the orcs. If they'd found this island twice now, they would surely be back again. I didn't want to just leave the Chero women to their own devices, but I didn't want to force them to abandon their home of hundreds of years either. It was all a very complicated matter, and one I dreaded trying to sort out. Still, I supposed these sorts of difficult decisions came along with the title of Draco Rex. Eventually, I got to the point where I couldn't stand to be alone with my thoughts anymore, so I gently pulled my arms out from underneath Lazan and Nadir. Then I sat up, rolled out of bed, and went over to my clothes.
Trying to cut and run.
Lazan's groggy voice chuckled.
I see how it is. You take us for a few rounds, then try to leave before we even wake up.
You know it's not like that. I rolled my eyes. Besides, it's not like I'd have anywhere to hide if I did.
Oh, that's right.
Nadir added, as she sat up and rubbed her eyes.
We Kunag women have excellent hunting skills. We'd find you in an outbeat.
I mean, I'm just going to find the rest of the crew. I'd imagine a blind man would be able to hunt me down in this situation.
Why do you need to find the rest of the group anyways?
Lazan grumbled through a sleepy haze.
Our mission is done. What more do you think they need to talk about?
There's still a lot we need to discuss, I noted, as I went through the mental checklist in my head. Our mission might be finished, but we're nowhere near being ready to leave just yet. That's why I want to speak with all the Chero women and the crew, so we can figure this all out.
Fine.
Lazan sighed.
But give us a few more minutes of rest. My legs are all wobbly from getting fucked so good. Also, we're nocturnal, remember?
I thought you said you were crepuscular.
That too.
Nadir grumbled as she laid back down in bed.
That too.
I tugged on my clothes, tightened my belt back around my waist, and then made my way out of the fertility hut. It was now the later afternoon when the sun was high in the sky and spread its warm rays across the billowing grass. The cluster of Chero houses was fairly far off in the distance, but even from here I couldn't see any signs of the rhino women out and about. Surely they weren't still at the mud pits. I meandered my way over to the main part of the Chero village, over to the crude skyscrapers of clay and straw. And as I wandered down the streets of the village, I noticed they were bustling with life, much like a modern-day city back in my world. Chero women entered and exited the buildings, and many of those who exited carried small bags of fabric in their hands. The sidewalks were full of people, while Mirax scurried along each side of the road in an orderly fashion. Rhino women smiled at each other as they passed atop their oversized ants, and I honestly couldn't believe what I was seeing. Zakiyu really was a genius for coming up with a fully operational city in the middle of a savanna. Eventually, I followed the pathway until I arrived at the very center of the village. Four different roads converged onto this point, which had a raised stage at its center, right next to a massive statue of the god Tembori. I could see a small crowd of people huddled in front of the stage, but three members of the crowd stood out way more than the rest. All three of our dragons were among the spectators, so I knew I was in the right place. As I drew closer to the stage, I saw the trio of Batari, Ashanti, and Rikuri stood on top of it. The Chero women who were watching them, however, didn't seem too enthralled with what they were hearing.
Has the Queen Mother gone mad?
A random rhino woman whispered as I passed.
I'm all for blind faith, but this is a new one.
Another grumbled. Eventually, I found all of my crewmates in a small cluster, so I promptly joined them and tried to see what was going on. These rhino women don't seem too happy, I announced as I walked over to my crew. Did Batari just announce she was implementing a new tax bracket or something?
They're talking about the orc attack. And everybody seems to have different ideas about what they can do to protect themselves.
It didn't look like they need to do much different. From down where I was standing, it looked like they handled the orcs without much fuss. I think you mean we handled the orcs without much fuss.
Tyrion snarked.
I was the one taking all the shots from the giant arrow shooter. And I was the one who kept all those big rocks from smushing us into jelly.
Swa'er nodded as he puffed out his little chest.
And I was the one who protected the village,
George declared. Swa'er and Tyrion shot the water dragon unconvinced glares.
You protected the village, eh?
Tyrion mused.
I carried the wounded back to the settlement, and then I stayed around to make sure none of the orcs broke the perimeter.
We were the ones keeping them away from the perimeter,
Tyrion reminded his dragon friend.
They never even got close to the village. Then I'd say I did a fine job, didn't I?
George snorted. Tyrion rolled his eyes at the water dragon, shook his head, and then let out a long sigh. Speaking of the wounded, how are those two Chero women doing?
They are alive and well. A little shaken up, but apparently the orcs only knocked them out and put them in a bag, so they didn't have much more than a knot on their heads.
Well, that's good to hear. I nodded. Knowing those orc fuckers, I was expecting a lot worse. Remember how they took Isla's eye?
They probably would have done much worse if you and Tyrion hadn't gone in and stopped them.
Daria interjected.
If they'd gotten over that hill and taken those women back to their ship, I don't even want to think of the horrors that would have awaited them.
That's why we need to help them make sure it never happens again. I don't know how exactly, but I want to help these women so they never have to worry about the threat of those ugly bastards ever again.
Batari and you must be on the same mental plane,
Anora noted, as she pointed to the stage.
That is what she is talking about right now. Preventative measures.
Queen Mother,
a random Chero woman raised her hand in the crowd.
We don't even know if the land dragons are still alive. Why should we waste time trying to bring them back?
Hold on. Batari's talking about bringing back the land dragons?
That's what she's saying. Though the rest of the village doesn't think it's possible.
Why not? I thought there were still a bunch of land dragons out there. They didn't all get killed by the Scudawar.
That's beyond me.
The golden-scaled warrior shrugged.
I think the Chero women would have a better capacity to answer that. Maybe you should ask Batara yourself.
All right. I turned back to the stage, raised my hand, and cleared my throat loudly.
The Draco Rex is returned!
Rikuri announced with excitement in her eyes.
Maybe he'll have some insight as to what we should do. Come up here, Ben.
Batari said, as she motioned for me to join them.
This is just as much your decision as it is ours.
I didn't know if that was a good thing or not. I lowered my hand down and quickly hustled up onto the stage. Then I went over and stood by Batari and turned to look out at the rest of the Chero women. For the most part, they seemed more frazzled and scared than frustrated, though their rambling could have easily fooled me.
So, I leaned over and whispered to Batari. Could you fill me in on exactly what you've been talking about? I don't want to take a stance before I actually know what I'm taking a stance on.
The Queen Mother here thinks we can't handle the orcs on our own.
Ashanti huffed.
That's not what I said at all.
The white-haired Chero leader grumbled.
I said that if the orcs were to come back in larger numbers, we would be in trouble. Especially if they came at night again. Also, once the Draco Rex departs from our island, it'll be almost completely devoid of dragons. I'm simply suggesting we call the land dragons back into our service, as was Tembori's original design. The land dragons haven't been back in several season cycles. What makes you think they'd come back now? Scudawar's dead, to begin with. That is the creature they could not overcome, the one they feared and that drove them into near extinction.
And?
One of the random Chero women argued.
If they fled the island or are off in some remote part of our land, how would they even know the creature's dead?
They wouldn't.
Batari agreed with a nod.
That is why we would need to inform them with the Great Horn of Ivory.
The crowd went silent, save for a few hushed whispers. The Chero women looked around at each other with a seeming mixture of curiosity and concern, though none of them voiced their opinions openly. Well, none of them but Ashanti.
The Great Horn of Ivory.
Ashanti scoffed.
We don't even know if that's real. The legends say it's real.
Batari reminded her best archer.
Why should we be led to believe the rest of Tambori's stories are true, but that one's false?
You're gonna have to back up, I'm afraid. I chuckled and held out my hands. I don't have any idea what you're talking about right now.
The Great Horn of Ivory is an instrument from one of our earliest legends.
Rikuri explained.
In the early days of our people, right after Tambori made his agreement with Tai that allowed her majestic creatures to live with us in harmony, it said Tambori pulled off a piece of one of his tusks and then used it to craft a horn. When he blew into the horn, it made a mighty bellow that rang out across our island.
Batari took over.
This call brought the land dragons to our people, and I believe Tambori wishes for history to repeat itself. If we can go and find the Great Horn of Ivory, we will be able to call the land dragons back to our side. Not to sound like a mud wallower,
Zamwe's voice interrupted as the shaman stepped forward from the crowd.
But I'm somewhat doubtful this is Tambori's plan. There's a reason he hid the location of the horn in a riddle and enchanted it with deadly protectors.
Deadly protectors around a magical horn whose location was wrapped in a puzzle? Now, this sounded like a challenge suited for the Draco Rex.
Perhaps it is a test.
Batari shrugged.
Our god is testing our faith by asking us to risk life and limb in order to bring our people back to their former prosperity. Or he's trying to tell us to stay away.
Ashanti argued.
Maybe that's his way of telling us to stick around our village, focus on creating more security with what we have. What do you think, Draco Rex?
Rikuri blurted out.
Do you think we should seek out the horn? Or do you believe we should focus on increasing the protections of our village?
All eyes suddenly fell on me, and my heart leapt up into my throat. However, I wasn't too nervous. The answer was actually pretty simple. Why not both? I asked with a shrug. If there's even the slightest chance that blowing the horn will bring back the dragons, then we should try to find it. However, we also can't just leave your village unprotected. I know you are all mighty warriors, some of the best I've ever met, in fact. But if the orcs come back, they might be more prepared than those bumbling idiots who attacked us last night. It's obvious we need to fortify the mountain to keep your people safe.
Fortify the mountain?
Rikuri scratched the stump where her horn used to be.
How could we possibly do that?
It's not that difficult. With that sort of terrain, you could build pit traps, avalanche nets. There are 100 possibilities. I can definitely show you all how to make it happen.
And the horn?
A Chero voice questioned. But simple. Once we have the mountain fortified, we send out a search party for the horn.
What about the guardians that protect it?
What about them? We've already killed the mightiest creature in these lands and fought off a miniature orc invasion. If we work together, I'm sure we can handle anything this island throws at us.
The Scudawar and the orcs were not the minions of Tambori.
The shaman shook her head.
The Matrai are.
Okay, what do I need to know about these Matrai, then?
Unfortunately, I cannot help you with this one. None of us have actually seen them, as they're only revealed to those who get too close to the Great Horn of Ivory. All I know is Tambori created them in his image.
Some god. He created a bunch of grunts in his image, but made the most important creature on this island look like the Lord of the Underworld? Thank goodness nobody but the Chero women worshipped this guy. We can deal with that later. Whatever the Matrai are, surely they can be killed. Now, as for those fortifications, we're going to need some logs. I'm not talking small tree branches either. I'm talking large logs that have some heft to them.
We still have plenty of large branches from fallen cloud brushes over by the mud pits.
Great. I nodded and then turned back to the crowd. It's settled then. We're going to fortify your village and then we're going to go out and look for the Great Horn of Ivory. Everybody, head over to the mud pits and grab as many logs as you can carry. If we move quickly, we can be done with these traps by nightfall. The Chero women let out a cheer of agreement before they all turned and shuffled away. Meanwhile, the three warrior women on the stage stood there in stunned silence.
Did you see that?
Batari breathed with wide eyes.
No bickering, no arguing. They just listened to what the Draco Rex had to say.
Rikuri added in an odd tone.
And then they did it.
It's probably just because they're so used to listening to Batari. Kind of like a child who just rebels against anything their parents say, whether they agree with it or not. But when a stranger offers up the exact same idea, they're all over it.
I wouldn't know.
Batari reminded me with a smile.
There's never actually been a Chero child before. But there soon will be.
And it'll bring along with it all the joys and hardships of motherhood that I've never gotten to experience before. It's all thanks to you, Ben.
Come back to me once you've changed your first sick baby diaper. Then we'll see if you're still thanking me.
I still think going after the horn's a waste of time.
Shanti grumbled.
Even if it is out there, we're gonna have to fight off a bunch of Tembori's hand-picked guardians. And even if we do that, even if we actually find the horn and kill all the creatures that protect it, we don't know if the horn will work. It might be broken, or there might not even be any land dragons left to answer the call.
We won't know until we try. I'd rather exhaust every single one of our options before I count them out as a loss, even if that means we might have to exhaust some of our time and energy to do so. The three Chero women and I wandered off the stage, where my crewmates waited to greet us.
What can we do to help?
Zarya asked, somewhat overzealously.
Shall we instruct these women on how to make traps similar to the ones back home?
You can try, I shrugged. The big issue is we make sure any invading forces can't climb down the mountain without running into these traps. Get as creative as you want with them, but just make sure they're deadly enough to deter those fuckers.
Deadly deterrence.
Zarya nodded with a sharp grin.
Got it.
Tyrion and George? I looked over at the two large dragons. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you're probably going to be needed to carry the larger logs.
Of course we are.
Tyrion chuckled, and then he shot a playful look over at George.
It's good to know we'll always be needed for something, right? Indeed. Heavy lifting, fast travel, and our strong breath.
Tyrion floated a few feet in the air as he and George turned to follow the rest of the Chero women. But Tyrion's head came back in the direction of Swa'er.
What about him? I know he's kind of small, but he could probably help carry some of the logs, too.
Swa'er just shook his head before he slithered over to Batari and wrapped himself around her arm. The little red dragon then looked at Tyrion with his big black eyes and slowly twitching whiskers.
I'm not sure if I can handle those. My claws are pretty small, and if I try to move the logs with my breath, it would just cause a big mess. I think I could be better used if I stick with Batari. Savor your cuteness while it lasts. Those adorable looks won't work forever. We'll see about that. They seem to be working pretty well so far.
Tyrion just rolled his eyes before he turned around and floated off toward the mud pits. George was right behind him, and the rest of my crew behind George. We all headed over to the stack of sticks and logs beside the mud pit, collected what we could carry, and then headed up the side of the mountain. The climb was a bit more difficult than normal on account of the extra weight, but it didn't take us very long to reach the first spot where I thought we could employ a trap. All right, I called out to the group. Let's stop here. If the orcs are able to get down to this point, that will mean they survived all the traps higher up the mountain. And if that happens, then you'll be in desperation mode. So I want to put the cruder mechanism down here.
Like a spike pet?
Nima questioned.
Those were always my favorite to make back on the Dragonkin Island.
And that's exactly the kind of thing I'm looking for. I nodded. Spike pits, trip wires with spikes, anything that can take out an orc quickly and doesn't take a ton of effort to create.
I think we can handle that.
Darya spoke up.
If you'd like, Draco Rex, Zarya and I can remain behind and teach the Chero women how to make these traps. We have plenty of experience with their creation.
Nima can help too, but otherwise I think it's a solid idea.
I'm not very good with my hands,
Zamway interjected.
I'll stay behind, make sure my people are doing things correctly.
We left Zamway and about 20 of the Chero women behind with Nima and the Dragonkin twins, and then the rest of us continued up the mountain. We ventured upward until we finally got to about the midway point on the incline, and then I stopped us again. Okay, I said as I looked around the landscape. This is where you'll want to put what I want to call secret traps. If the orcs get to this point, they'll have made it past the first wave of traps and think they're home free. It's our job to prove them wrong. That means tripwire tension traps hidden behind rocks and things nestled into the surface of the ground and then covered with a thin layer of soil.
Oh, I actually have some ideas for this one,
Mira announced.
We usually go for traps that stab, but what if we went with traps that mangle instead?
Oh, I like where your head's at, Mira. I smiled at the Dragonkin warrior. What are you thinking?
What if we created a simple tension mechanism, but put a tick rock on the end of the weapon?
The beautiful Dragonkin woman continued.
That way the momentum of the swinging stick would act like a hammer and shatter their kneecaps. Or their ribs. Or their head, if we get more creative.
Oh, perfect. You take a couple of the Chero women and get to work on doing that.
I want to be in on this, too!
Rikuri cackled.
These sound like my kind of weapons.
Mira and Rikuri stayed behind at this point, along with another dozen Chero women. Once we parted company, the rest of us continued onward until we reached the top of the mountain. The ballista was still up there, so I walked over to it and placed my hand on its wood.
First things first, we need to figure out what we're doing with this. If we're trying to fortify your village, we definitely don't want to just hand the invading force a giant-ass crossbow they can fire down onto you from above.
It could be a very valuable asset if we found a way to keep it.
Batari noted.
Maybe we could have one of our warriors stationed up here during standard patrols. That way they could use this large bow and arrow to attack enemies on the other side of the mountain before they even get here.
Well, that's not a bad idea. But you gotta think about what might happen if somebody is able to get up here before you see them. The ballista is a great weapon, but it's not going to do much good if you only have one person manning it. And it's all the way up here, away from backup. You could get overrun way too easily, and then your enemy would have a powerful weapon at their disposal.
Should we destroy it, then?
Ashanti mused.
It's not like it's a real bow and arrow, anyway. Real archery takes patience, skill, and a good eye. This is the kind of thing you just aim and shoot without reason.
And it's a weapon that could take down a dragon or take out an enemy siege engine with a single bolt, I reminded the three-horned women. We're definitely not going to destroy it. We just have to figure out how to get it further down the mountain. It's on wheels, but I can't imagine how much of a pain in the ass it'll be to try and take it down such a steep gradient.
How in the name of Tambori did the orcs get it up here?
Batari questioned.
The landscape's just as steep on the other side.
My guess is they had a bunch of their kind get behind it and just push with all their might.
Jonas shrugged.
The thing about orcs is they truly don't care about the safety of their people. Now, whether that's because they're heartless and don't mind if their underlings die, or if it's because they're too stupid to understand gravity, that's another thing.
Could one of the dragons carry it?
Batari suggested.
Obviously not Swyer, but one of the other two?
Probably. What do you guys think? Do you think you could tag-team this thing and get it back down to the Chero village?
Maybe.
Tyrion studied the ballista.
Let me try to lift it up.
The silver dragon dropped the log in his paws and then floated over so he was hovering just above the ballista. He slowly lowered himself down, wrapped his talons around the weapon's two wooden limbs, and tried to pull it up into the air. Tyrion huffed loudly as his whole body tensed up, but he only seemed to be able to lift the ballista a few feet off the ground.
Let me help you,
George offered as he dropped the log in his mouth and ran over to the struggling fire dragon. We watched as George crouched down and positioned himself so his back was pressed up against the underside of the ballista. The water dragon then let out a grunt as he extended his legs and used the bulk of his body to lift the siege engine further into the sky.
Phew! It feels like this thing just got 1,000 pounds lighter. Speak for yourself! Remember how I said my max capacity was 5 or 6 people? Well, this is like carrying 10.
Do you need some more help? I asked our bond mates. We could try to get some of the Murax to maybe...
We will be fine, dear one. We just need to get moving now before my legs start to get weak. Now, where did you want us to put this?
Take it down to the patrol towers,
Batari explained.
I'm not quite sure where we want it for certain, but we'll need it somewhere in that general area.
Sure thing. On the plus side, maybe if I carry around this thing for long enough, my leg muscles will get as big as those dragons we saw back on the Volcano Island. I wouldn't hold my breath. I'm sure it took them years to get into that shape.
With that, George began to lumber down the mountain with the ballista on his back, while Tyrion floated above him and tried to use his own leverage to lessen the load. The two dragons had to move extremely slowly, but they still walked at a fairly brisk pace. I just hope their muscles didn't give out before they made it to the bottom. If that happened, we were going to have a very, very destructive mess on our hands.
Now that that's taken care of,
Kandara said, as she watched the dragons leave.
What can we do up here?
Well, this is going to be the literal first line of defense, so this is going to be the spot where you put in the heavy hitters. At this point, the orcs might be cautious, but they're probably not actively expecting any traps. The goal is to hit them hard up here, take out any survivors with the surprise traps at the next level, and then wipe out the stragglers with the crude traps. That way, even if some of them end up surviving, their numbers should be so thin they'll be easy for us to finish off.
What do you suggest, then?
Honora asked.
Show us some of these major traps.
Well, there are a shit ton of stones around here, I noted as I looked around. A rock deadfall trap would probably be ideal in this situation, as would a terrain trap in the ground or a simulated avalanche.
Those all sound wonderful,
Ashanti chuckled.
I want to know how to do all of them.
Well, we should start with the deadfall one. That's going to require all of us to lift the giant-ass rock and logs, and then we can split apart and try and build the smaller ones. All we really need is a giant rock, a couple of logs, and a bunch of smaller boulders, and some sort of bait to lure them inside. My crew and the Chero women spent the next hour or so scouring the landscape, in search of rocks large enough to create a deadfall trap. Usually these sorts of devices were used to kill smaller animals like squirrels or rabbits, but if we ramped up the size, we could easily use it to kill an orc. Or, if it was big enough, we could use it to kill off a bunch of the stupid ugly fuckers. Eventually, we found a large, flat rock about the length of a small semi-truck, and about equally as wide.
Do you think this will work?
Gandara questioned, as she pointed to the rock on the ground.
It's kind of narrow.
That's not actually a bad thing. If it's narrow, then that just means any bad guys will have to go further inside to check out what's in there. And if there's more enemies under the rock when it trips...
The more that go splat.
Ashanti chuckled.
It's perfect.
All right. I announced to all the rest of the women around me. Here's how it's going to work. I'm going to need at least 6 people on each side of the rock to help lift. When I give the signal, we all lift it up. And while it's in the air, I'll need a couple of you to prop it up with a giant log. Then, while we've got it propped up, we need to put 2 more smaller logs together at a 45-degree angle to try and hold it up.
That sounds real unstable.
Batari frowned. That's the point. The second anything even brushes past those sticks, they get crushed. 6 of the Chero women came around to each side of the large rock, while a few more picked up one of the logs Tyrion had carried up. On the count of 3, they hoisted the close end of the stone up into the air, and their friends placed the end of the log firmly against it to keep it propped up. Once that was in place, I commanded a few of my crewmates to help me carve the ends of 2 smaller logs into corresponding angles, and then we began to put them in place. I held my breath intensely as I slowly slid the end of the stick into the spot where the stone and the log touched. It took some effort to get the damn thing to even budge, but thankfully my enhanced strength was enough to force it in. As the semi-vertical stick slid between the rocky and wooden surface, Gandara and Anora both placed the horizontal stick snugly up against the original log. Now came the moment of truth. I took a deep breath, nodded to my friends, and then released my grip on the wooden component of the trap. Much to my surprise, it stayed upright.
Yes!
I proclaimed as I pumped my fist in the air.
Oh, holy shit! I wasn't sure if it'd actually work at this size, but it looks like it did! Now, nobody even thinks of walking past these sticks unless you have a death wish.
Is that it?
Ashanti questioned as she looked at the trap up and down.
It seems like it would take a great feat of chance for an orc to wander into this.
Not quite. I shook my head. You remember how we collected all those medium-sized stones? Those need to be placed all around the sides of the rock, all the way up to the trip mechanism. But first we need bait of some sort.
Bait for the orcs? Unless we put a live woman or a boiling pot of stew inside of the trap, I'm not sure what they'd really go for. They tend to think with their stomachs and their penises, in no particular order.
I've actually got something even better in mind. Something that won't appeal to either of those primal urges. I reached into my pocket and pulled out a small piece of sea glass.
Ben, please tell me you're not thinking about using our sacred mineral as trap bait.
I am, I nodded. It's just a small piece anyway, so it's not like we could have used this for weapons or anything. Besides, it's going toward a good cause.
Perhaps I'm just as confused.
Batari noted.
Why would the orcs be attracted by a clear piece of stone? Couldn't they find that anywhere else in the world? It only exists on our island.
Anora spoke up.
And thanks to our Draco Rex, access to our island has been all but cut off from the orcs.
They keep trying, though. Every time they do, we just knock them back under the filthy rock they crawled out of.
What? Is it, though?
Ashanti questioned as she looked the piece over.
Does it have magical properties?
You could say that. I nodded. This is sea glass, one of the most durable materials in the world. It's what my sword is made out of, as well as all of my crewmates' daggers. You can use it for just about anything, though it's mostly used to create tools and weapons.
And you'll think they want this?
Batari continued. Of course they'll want it. Do you have any idea how many times they've seen this stuff used to kick their asses? They'll practically be frothing at the mouth to snatch it up.
But you just said the piece you have isn't enough to make anything.
Ashanti furrowed her brow and rubbed her top horn slowly. It's not, I shrugged. But if they see it lying in this little cave, they might just think they've found a place where it grows naturally. They'll try to go deeper, hopefully in large numbers. That's when...
Splat.
Ashanti grinned. Splat. I nodded in confirmation. Now, let's get the wall set up on this thing. We spent the next 20 minutes or so placing boulders around the sides of the trap, though it proved to be a bit more difficult than it sounded in theory. Eventually, we got it to where the trap looked like the entrance to a rough cave, or at least it was convincing enough for a dumb-as-rock species like the orcs. Finally, I tossed my piece of sea glass right into the trap, and it landed about halfway into its depths.
Whew!
Honora wiped her brow and stepped back to admire our work.
That was more work than trying to hurt a baby water dragon.
It'll be worth it, I reminded everyone. And now that you have all seen how it's done, you can easily reset this thing as many times as you want, even when we're gone. My heart physically hurt as the last bit came out of my mouth, but I didn't want to dwell on it for too long. Jonas must have sensed the elephant in the room because he quickly cleared his throat and spoke up.
What other traps may we create, Draco Rex?
The elderly soothsayer asked.
Hmm?
I said, as I tried to break through my fog of concern.
Well, the only other thing I can think of that would be a good frontline trap would be some rock slides.
Rock slides?
Kandara questioned.
Like an avalanche?
Exactly like an avalanche.
I nodded. Only this one is created by us and triggered by a tripwire. We'll need two more large boulders, and then a shit ton of smaller rocks and a log to hold it all together. Plus some rope, but we already came prepared with some of that. For the next hour, I instructed the Chero women and my crew in the art of making a rock slide trap. First, we found two larger boulders, which we put into place about 10 feet across from each other. And once we dug those into the ground, we laid a few of the larger logs across the length of the gap between the stones. We then used the remaining sticks to create a rough leaning platform, whose back end was firmly nestled into the side of the mountain, and whose front side was supported by a handful of logs. Of course, all of these logs were only loosely jammed into place. We then all carried smaller rocks of all shapes and sizes over to the platform, piled them atop one another, and continued on until there was a huge buildup of deadly debris nestled on the platform. When we finally were done positioning the rocks, we took a step back and admired our work.
Now what?
Batari panted.
We have the rock slide piled up, but how in the name of Tambori are we actually going to trigger it?
With a tripwire, I explained, as I pointed to the front supports of the platform. See how unstable those logs are? All we have to do is create a tripwire that will knock them loose, and then the whole thing will come crashing down and send the rocks rolling down the mountainside.
Those logs are huge,
the white-haired Chero woman protested.
I know the orcs are muscular, but they're not going to be able to pull down a whole log just by walking over a string.
They won't, but the hammer they trigger just might.
Well,
Ashanti muttered.
The Draco Rex really has thought of everything. No wonder he's seen as a god amongst his people.
Please, I'm not a god. I just watched a lot of survivalist YouTube channels back in the day. And a healthy dose of Bear Grylls. I know he's kind of fake, but I always loved watching him nonetheless.
He sounds mighty and wise.
Oh, he is. Even though I don't think I'd ever get desperate enough to drink my own piss.
Why would you?
Ashanti began, but I quickly cut her off. It's a joke. Now, let's get to work on this hammer. Kandara and Honora, this is going to take a little while, so how about you two set up the tripwire mechanism while I'm doing the hammer?
I could do a tripwire in my sleep.
Honora smiled, and her yellow eyes lit up with vigor. The two women set off to create the next contraption, and I headed back over to the platform. The last part of the trap took no time at all. Between the fortifications I'd built on the Dragonkin Island and the different weapon-making tutorials I'd watched religiously back during my Coast Guard days, I was practically an expert on how to make a hammer out of a rock and a stick. I attached the head of the hammer onto its shaft before I took it up to the bottom of the platform. Next, I placed the end of the weapon's hilt against the wood and pretended to let it swing down like it was attached at one of the support beams on the bottom of the platform. It took me a few tries to get it where it needed to be, and then I marked the spot where it needed to go by carving an X into the wood with my dagger. Once that was done, I notched the end of the hammer's hilt down about 2 inches, carved holes on either side of the notch, and found a small stick that would act as a pin. Now I just needed an actual hinge. Gently, I used my dagger to carve a hole all the way through the 3-inch-wide support beam. The process took nearly 20 minutes, but when I was finally done, I had a thin hole that matched up perfectly with the holes on the end of the hammer. I slid the notch of the tool over the beam, inserted the stick through the holes, and voila! I had a functioning, swinging hammer.
Tambori's desks. How do they do that? I don't know.
Ashanti whistled.
But we must find this YouTube he speaks of and study it intensely.
The tripwire setup's ready, Draco Rex!
Kandara called out from a few yards away.
Excellent! That means we'll just need to connect it and everything should be good.
I wandered down to where the two women had created the contraption, picked up the string, and walked it over to the hammer. I fastened the end of the tripwire to a stick, which I then used to prop up the hammer against the bottom of the platform.
There. It was done.
Now we had two deadly traps ready, just in case the orcs decided to try something stupid while I wasn't around to stop them.
Once my crew had wrapped up our duties, we began back down the mountain to see how everyone else was doing. But as we approached Mira's group, the Dragonkin warrior ran over and held up her hands to stop us.
Oh!
The golden-scaled woman chuckled.
I wouldn't go much further if I were you, unless you want to find yourself face first in a pit of spikes.
You built pit spikes.
Ashanti's mouth fell agape.
Where?
Right there in front of you,
Mira said as she pointed to a spot on the ground about 20 feet away.
You can't even tell, can you?
No.
Batari gasped.
We would have walked right into it if you hadn't warned us. That's the idea.
Mira winked. How are the rest of the traps coming? Do you think we have enough to keep the village fortified?
I'd hope so. We've set up 5 different pits and a couple of snails.
Excellent. I clapped my hands together. That's plenty, so you can probably call it a night. Now that just leaves the first group. We all continued down the mountain until we arrived at the spot where the final line of traps were located, and even from afar I could see the signs of danger in the area. There were piles of sticks that weren't there before, as well as a few strangely placed boulders I knew were there to hide the mechanisms from the naked eye.
We were wondering when you guys were coming back,
Darya announced when she saw us approaching.
We fortified this area quite well, Draco Rex. Hopefully it's to your liking.
If it's good enough to kill the orcs, then it's already to my liking. I gathered up the rest of the crew and the Chero women, and then we headed back down to the village below. The sun was just starting to set across the landscape of the savannah, and I didn't want us to be out after dark. I'd already experienced the horrors of the Chero Island after dark one too many times for my liking. The balista from the top of the mountain rested to the immediate right of the village entrance, with a Chero woman stationed atop it already. Meanwhile, Tyrion and George were both curled up in a ball next to the siege engine. The two dragons were splayed out like a cat on its back after a long day, with their limbs spread out wide and their tongues hanging out of their mouths. Poor guys. Carrying that ballista down the mountain must have been way harder than they'd originally thought. Oh well. When we got back to the Dragonkin Island, I was totally going to give them extra helpings of boar for all their troubles.
Whew!
So Ayer whistled when he saw his dragon friends.
Now I'm really glad I didn't have to carry that thing down. They look like they could be asleep for a whole week.
Oh, it's not just them.
Batari yawned.
Building traps for several hours really sucks the energy out of you.
It's all right. We're all tired. It's been a really weird 24 hours, and we've been working hard this entire time. Everybody go off and get some rest, because tomorrow is going to be even crazier. The villagers muttered to themselves as they headed off in all directions, and I was left with nothing but my crew and the Chero women trio. I bade Batari, Ashanti, and Rikuri a good night before I followed my crewmates back to our temporary home. I could rest easily now that I knew the Chero village was safe from another orc attack, and I was going to need all the rest I could get. For tomorrow, we were heading out to find the Great Horn of Ivory and any of the perils that might come along with it.